Aha!
All right, partner. You know what time it is.
Mud babies, pod people, and inhabitants of the planet Earth, it is I, your wild and crazy Steve Martinish Tiki Leader. Why did I say Steve Martin? No fucking idea. Anyway, yesterday I did a podcast called Dylan Brody's Neighbor's Couch, and it's done by a guy named Darren Staley. And we had so much fun doing his podcast that I wanted him to do mine. So I was going to record him, but I forgot to bring my mixer to work this. Because normally I do this through my Yeti microphone. I've got this one very good microphone that I hook into my laptop, and that's why the sound quality is better, because this is a professional mic. Well, didn't bring the mixer to put the phone call through, so I had to figure out a way to do it, and I came up with Google Voice. It's the only thing I could figure out how to do it. There's probably other ways, and if you know, let me know. But anyway, here is the interview I did with Darren through Google Voice. I hope it's good enough quality that you'll sit through, because it was a great interview. We had so much fun. We talked about comedy, country music. We even talked about Waylon, and this is the best one ever. We discussed our love for Paul Williams. That's right, the singer Paul Williams. You'll find out why if you listen. Here it is, Darren Staley. It's Dylan Brody's Neighbor's Couch. This
call is now being recorded.
Hey!
Hey, how's it going? Looks like we got it working.
I'm going to give this a shot. I got it hooked up. I tried it with the girlfriend. It recorded all right, and if it works, I'll post it. If not, we'll do it again next week. How's that?
That sounds like a plan, man.
Beautiful. So, I'm on the phone with Darren Staley. Is that, I'm pronouncing that right, Staley?
Staley's right, Staley, yep.
Yep. So I was on your podcast yesterday, Dylan Brody's Couch.
Dylan Brody's Neighbor's Couch.
Neighbor's Couch, that's right. It's even further away.
Exactly. He tries to keep me at a distance.
So tell me, and the listeners, how did that get started?
Well, it's actually kind of a long story, and I'll try to shorten it up as best I can. I can ramble sometimes, but I started out, I was on Twitter, and I was hanging out with, a lot of comedians there, Dylan and Kelly Carlin, Paul Provenza, mm-hmm. a bunch of those guys, and, mm-hmm. We were always, we would just joke around with each other on Twitter and kind of do a pop that joke kind of thing, and, hashtag games and stuff like that,
right.
And just mess around with each other. And so I kind of got good feedback, talking with, comedians and folks like that. And one night I made a joke on Twitter to Dylan, and I said, or not to Dylan, but about him. I said, Dylan Brody has invited me to live, to come to L.A. and live on his couch. And Dylan tweeted back, no, but you could stay on my neighbor's couch. So then the idea hit me. I emailed Dylan, and I said, how about this for a podcast idea? I said, basically, the way it's set up, I'll do it from my place, here in North Carolina. But the way it's set up, I'm actually broadcasting. When I get to L.A., I find out that Dylan's neighbor's couch is actually left out on the curb, for the garbage man to pick up. So I live on the curb there on his neighbor's couch. His neighbor's gone. And then when people come over to see him, comedians or whoever, they stop by the couch, and I chat with them for a few minutes, and then they go see Dylan. So that was the original genesis of the show.
Right. Well, that explains the picture on the website of you sitting out by the trash can.
Yeah. Yeah, my cousin and I staged that picture out here in the driveway. People really seem to enjoy that.
That's really a funny picture. Now, all the stuff that's on the couch there, I noticed that there's a book and like a Rolling Stone magazine. Is that just random stuff, or is that stuff that mentions Dylan?
Well, it's actually, the magazines and newspapers are kind of random stuff. You know, I read Rolling Stone and Entertainment Weekly, so I had those around. And but no, the CD was Dylan's CD, his, not the last one, but the one before, Twist of the Wit. And then the other book is another friend who was on Twitter at the time, Paul Myers, who's a friend of mine. It's his book. He wrote a book about Todd Rundgren, A Wizard of True Star. So I had his book there as well. He was also like my first guest, aside from the first episode with just Dylan. So that's kind of an homage to those guys for being kind of the first two guys on the show.
Right. Well, I got to give you some props for liking Todd Rundgren.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't really know much about him until I met Paul, so it's really more Paul
Hello,
than me.
Hello, it's me. You like some of the songs?
I actually don't know much about him except for the book.
Oh, shame on you. Now, you had me all worked up, but you're a music fan. I take it that you're, and I was surprised to find this out, you're a Paul Williams fan?
Yes, I am. I've always been a big Paul Williams fan. I know Craig Shoemaker, who knows him well. I've had on the show, but yeah, and I caught his the Showtime documentary, Paul Williams. I think it's called "I'm Not Dead," and that it was so good, and it really kind of was like a kick in the ass reminder of, hey, you know, Paul Williams is still out there. And so yeah, I started kind of giving a shout out to his documentary there. I love Paul Williams.
I remember seeing that myself, the documentary, and being like, oh my God, he's still alive.
Yeah, and it was a great title, Paul Williams, I'm Not Dead. And yeah, you just forget how many great songs he wrote, you know, from Rainy Days and Mondays to, I mean, the Muppet song, I can't remember the name of it, but just such a great songwriter and a great singer as well.
Oh, he wrote Evergreen, didn't he, for Barbra Streisand, another one of the big ones.
Yes, he did, yes.
I thought maybe, now, did you find Paul through Smokey and the Bandit originally?
Yes, I did. Probably like everybody else in the South. That's exactly where I found him originally.
One of the greatest movies of all time, according to any Southerner that you talk to.
Absolutely. Eastbound and Down, Loaded Up and Trucking. We used to sing that. I mean, that's the one song, the theme to the Dukes of Hazzard and the theme to Smokey and the Bandit. Those are the two songs that everybody in my neighborhood, you know, of that age, we knew all the lyrics to those two. I mean, even if we couldn't sing, and of course I can't, those lyrics, everybody knew the lyrics to those two theme songs.
Right. The Dukes of Hazzard song, I had a band for years, and we used to do the Dukes of Hazzard song. And when we'd play that in clubs, the whole club would sing along.
Yeah. So great. It's just such a classic. And of course, Waylon is awesome.
Oh, now you're waiting. Now let's find out now. You're a Waylon guy, but let's put that. This is always my country question. Is it Waylon or Willie? Waylon or Willie?
For me, it's Waylon. I love Willie.
Gotta go with Waylon.
Yeah, for me, it's always been Waylon. I remember growing up, I had the, you know, I was a big album guy, vinyl guy. And it was the Greatest Hits album. The album was even so cool. It was brown. It had the big gold Waylon symbol on it. I probably wore that.
I had it.
Yeah, I wore that sucker out.
The only two things in life that make it worth living, that's guitars and two good and firm feeling women.
I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song tonight.
Maybe it's time we got back to the
basics, of love.
Yeah, dude, you're moving up my chain of respect.
Yeah, big Waylon fan. And I was, I got into country music. I don't want to go off on a different angle here. It's your show, but
you later, always take it to country music.
Yeah, later, like, I guess it was the late 90s, I got to work for this website called FM Sound, and I did music review. I was their country guy. No, because the whole crowd was kind of younger, and most of them were from New York, and it was mostly kind of hip hop and pop music. And I was the only guy there that would review the country stuff, which was cool for me because nobody else would do it. And I got, free tickets, Toby Keith concerts. I interviewed Rascal Flatts when they were still an opening act. Tim McGraw show. I got every goodie that you could get on the countryside. I got because nobody else would do it.
Now, don't you love those kind of free swags like that? When I was the DJ at the country station, that was always one of my favorite things. Just getting the free albums and free tickets and free shirts and jackets and hats.
Yep, I remember this was when Big and Rich first hit. I can't remember if it was on the CMAs or the ACMs. They came out, it was their first kind of big time on screen. They came out and did Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. And, nobody knew who they were. And, they came out, just like a punch in the gut with that song. And and I just wrote, I had a contact at Warner Brothers, that was their label, probably still is. And I emailed the publicist. And I said, wow, those guys are going to be big. I said, that absolutely blew me away. 3 days later, I got a Big and Rich t-shirt in the mail. And I was like, wow, this is so cool.
All I got to do is say something nice and get free shit.
Yeah, exactly. That reminds me, too, of another story. Elaine Schott, who's Toby Keith's publicist, I reviewed a lot of his stuff. And I used to, my big thing, this was going to be like my big interview, was to get the Toby Keith interview. And, of course, Toby, this was back, he was on 60 Minutes. He wasn't really looking to do an interview on this independent website. And she was always so nice about it. You're on the list, but I don't think, right now, it's kind of low on the list. But I would ask for the interview so many times if I would ask for something else. Like, Toby's coming to Greensboro and Raleigh. Do you think I can get tickets for both shows? Oh, sure. It's like, as long as you'll leave me alone about the interview, you can have anything else you want. Just stop with the interview request.
So you just kept everyone, add another concert in. Add another.
Yeah, add another. Yeah, anytime. And but she was so cool. A year after I stopped writing for the website, I was still on a mailing list, and she sent an email, and I said, I'm not really, writing for the website anymore, but I would really like to go to that show. Do you have any press passes? And she caught me into the show, and I'd reviewed his stuff. That was just so cool. And that's kind of a miss. There are so many great people in the country music industry, and I don't think that this gets said enough. They feel, and this is a lot my opinion, but I think it's the case. They feel so kind of disrespected in a lot of ways, from throughout history, that once they find out that you're not, gonna rip them publicly or screw them around, they'll bend over backwards to be good to you and help you out.
Oh, I totally agree. With all my years that I was in country radio, I made a lot of friends in the artists because I treated them like real people. I found out years ago when I opened for Dolly Parton that they are just like you and me. They're exactly, they're just people that sing well, and they know it, and they don't have the attitudes like rock stars.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, especially when it comes to critics, if you want to use that word, they kind of take that kind of humility as weakness in a way, and it makes it easier for them to kind of trample on them a little bit. That's kind of been my experience.
Yeah, well, you find a lot of these guys, they're humble dudes from small towns that got, they can just sing, they had a band, and they got discovered, and they're like, you talk to them, like, oh, shucks, man, thanks, I'm glad you like my stuff.
Yeah, and just so happy and so grateful, like I said, I was doing this, I don't know what the readership was of that website, but it was in the 90s, so, the web still wasn't, crazy like it was now, where everybody has a website. And, maybe the website might have got, from Rolling Stone or, any huge publication.
That, sorry, that broke up for just a second. What were you saying about the Rolling Stone?
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I said, I don't, you know, even though the website, it was an independent website, probably didn't have huge readership. I said, but these guys, you know, they treated me, you know, with as much, you know, respect as they would, somebody from Rolling Stone or any other big magazine.
Oh, yeah. Right. I can see that. So who is your favorite new country artist?
That's interesting. You know, I went for a long time where I didn't really listen to a lot of new country. But I really like, and this may be not new, but, you know, Jamie Johnson is kind of a newer guy who I really like.
He's one of my favorite. The guitar album is one of the best albums ever.
Yeah, I love that guy. He really hits me pretty hard. I love him. You know, Jason Aldean's good. Blake Shelton. I've always been a Blake Shelton fan for years. Those kind of guys, you know, for a long time I was, and this comes from my dad, because my dad is a huge country music fan, but he's also very traditional. You know, the Alan Jackson, that kind of thing. You know, anybody that tries any kind of crossover, anything, that they're dead to him.
That's the way I feel.
Yeah, he's like, that's not country. But, and I've kind of tried to open my mind, you know, a little bit and listen to some of the, you know, poppier stuff. But, you know, in my heart, you know, I'm still a traditionalist, and I still really gravitate toward the old stuff a lot.
But I call the new stuff, I call it hick hop. And it drives me crazy. Like Jason Aldean doing that whole thing about Joe Diffie. Have you heard that one?
No, I thankfully I haven't.
it's called 1994, and it's about the year 1994 and growing up and how Joe Diffie was, you know, on everybody's radio. And part of the song is him going, Joe Diffie. And it's like, man, just play some Joe Diffie. Nobody wants to hear this.
Yeah. Joe Diffie had a lot of great times. I interviewed Joe Diffie back in the day. He's a great guy. Yeah, just play his. I agree with you. Just play his song or sample it or something.
Right, sample it in the song. I would have loved to heard a little John Deere Green in there, or what was the truck song that Joe Diffie did? Remember the truck?
Oh man, what was that? I can't remember. I know John Deere Green well.
Oh, love John. All those Home was a great song.
What was the one, Ships That Don't Come In was great.
Yep.
I mean, just huge.
See, I had this argument with people about country music because I'm a more of a traditionalist, but I think country music is country music. If there's blues, there's blues. Jazz is a style. It's a genre. You know what I mean? Country is country. If you want to do something else with it, make it a different genre. Like rap isn't hip hop. You know what I mean? It's like,
that's right. Yeah, you're exactly right. And
don't say this is country music because it's not.
I just wonder. I would assume the reason that it's all under one umbrella now is, you know, because the music industry's in so much trouble that there isn't, you know, room for subgenres. Everything's got to be all crammed together, which I think is another reason that the traditional country music got squeezed out for the crossover appeal. Because they wanted to be able to play their, you know, play the records on as many formats as possible.
Well, I might have been okay with the crossover stuff because, I mean, like things like, remember Kenny Rogers and Dolly doing Islands in the Stream? That was not country, but it was still close enough. But
close enough.
But when I hear a lot of the stuff today, how many songs can you hear today that mention driving in your truck, sitting next to me, putting your feet up on the dash, drinking a beer on the tailgate, going down the road? I mean, how many songs use that exact same stuff?
Yeah, and you just mentioned Jason Aldean. What is it? The Dirt Road anthem. It was that same kind of thing there.
Yeah, that's Jason Aldean. That's the Florida Georgia Line. They're doing Cruising. Get up next to me and cruise. Put the word cruise. Jake Owen had one. Didn't he have one about get up on here, 8 second ride with me on the truck?
Yeah, and then there's the big green tractor thing, I think. It's one I can't
ride with me.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wish you. I wish you would go back to just some those hurt and cheating songs. I miss those kind of George Jones, Merle Haggard, that kind of they were story songs. I think is what we're thinking of.
Yeah, and not only just story songs, but songs that could, and this is sounding cliche because and it's been sampled in a new song, but State of Mind was a really good Clint Black song, and it said ain't it funny how a melody can bring back a memory. Take you to another place in time, change your state of mind. And
right.
I think that's a testament to a great song. If it can change your whole, just listening to the song is so powerful. It can switch your mood or change your day. I actually had, my cousin and I, we had CMT and, we used to get together on the weekends, and party like crazy. And so, what we would do is for our weekend parties, We would record different videos, CMT videos on this VHS tape, and we would only record like the saddest, rip your heart out and step on it on the floor stuff. And man, we would spend the weekend in tears, crying in our beer. Oh, the dance! Oh my God! We'd be hugging it out, in a Chevy in a hurry in the Ford.
I basically did that too. I used to record the saddest. I love to make heartbreak albums. He Stopped Loving Her Today and Today My World Slipped Away, Vern Gosden, those kind of songs.
Yeah, Vern Gosden, the voice, also so fantastic. Man, was he good. That's kind of weird, that most people make, their mixtapes are like, happy I love you songs. And we're sitting around making mixtapes, before we even get the relationship, they're already over with the tape.
Oh.
we're already at the end, we make the mixtape for the end, not the beginning of the relationship.
Right, if I made a mixtape for a girl, she'd just go ahead and cut her wrist and get it over with.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, this guy's a manic depressive, I kind of dig him.
Well, I'm glad to find the kindred soul in the sad country songs.
Yeah, and it's hard out there, and especially, I don't really talk about it a lot on my show, because it's most of the people, no offense to them or anything. Of course, I love all my guests and all my friends, but they're all there's really no big country, what I want to say, clique out in the LA artistic world that I found yet.
No, I didn't find that either when I lived out there. And it was one of the reasons I didn't hang well.
Yeah.
With our, and I'm sure you found this too, with Southern sensibilities, it's really hard to live in L.A. because everything feels fake and lied to. And the one thing I was raised as in the South was your word is all you have. A handshake is a contract. And I was always raised that way. And I just feel like everything is a lie. Or an illusion in L.A.
Either that or an agenda, even more so.
Exactly.
And that's the only thing that I, even though, of course, I'm not physically there, but the people that I know and are friends with, feel that same way, and they're actually in that world. And that's kind of a weird thing, when you're talking to a lot of people from L.A., and I'm not saying, again, everybody's like this, but so many people I talk to are in L.A. are kind of like, L.A. really sucks. it's filled with, phony baloney bullshit. And I'm like, well, that's your town. Well, it kind of has to be. This is where it's at.
Right. But in this day and age, one thing I'm finding that in this day and age with now all the new media and internet, you can do anything from anywhere. Like some of my friends in Denver, Ben Roy and these guys from the Growlicks, they've got a TV show pilot on Amazon now that they're shooting out of Denver.
Yeah, and I think to kind of go from the music to more of the entertainment, like stand-up, I've talked about this before. I really think that, of course, the Louis C.K., when he did his show and put it on the internet for $5, and, Jim
right.
Gaffigan, and a lot of those guys have done the same thing, and it's going to be the time I mentioned this. I saw a thing on the web where basically there were like 10 comics that came together, and they all did their routine, you know, in a small club with a crowd, but they streamed it, you know, on the internet, like $5. And, you know, you could just sit on your computer and watch 10 comics, you know, for $5. And, you know, once broadband speeds get faster and technology catches up, it's going to be really hard, you know, especially with things like you already have in the house, you know, with Netflix and, you know, your TV's as big as your movie screen now. It's going to take a lot more to make that physical location necessary and to get people out of their house to go see it, really, I think.
I think you're right. I think Netflix and, for me, Roku, which I have in my house, I think anything that I can find on Roku, I watch. I watch some bizarre stuff on app TV.
Yeah, and there's just so much of everything. I mean, you could sit down for, you know, 72 straight hours and never watch something different.
Right, because everybody's got their. If you start looking, you find those really weird shows. People are putting their own shows on app TV, and I found some interesting, you know, podcast type video shows that I've learned to like.
Yeah, and speaking of that, just podcasts. I mean, there are so many, and I want to ask you about this too. There's so many podcasts out there. I mean, and so many, you know, really, really, really good ones. I mean, you could really spend, you know, your whole day, you know, just listening to podcasts, and, you know, you can listen to it anywhere. And, you know, I've actually worried at times, you know, as somebody who does a podcast, you know, is there ever going to be, you know, a bubble, you know, where there's actually too many, but that hasn't happened in TV. So,
yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the good will rise to the top, the mediocre will stay there, and the bottom feeders will eat the trash. I just think that, you know, I was surprised for myself when I first started doing my podcast, Remasculate, that I put it up on Podbean, and I thought, well, we'll see what happens. And, you know, the first day, there's like 40, 50 hits. I thought, that's pretty cool. And then a few weeks go by, and I was on the top page of Podbean of podcasts, and I thought, how did this happen? How did this many people find me that I'm now, you know, they have five pages at the top of Podbean, and I was on the first page. It's like, how did this happen? And I think part of it is if you have a semi name, you know, like I've been doing stand up, and I had been a Comedy Central special, so if somebody just Googled me, they found it.
Yeah.
And I think that helps on taking a podcast up the chart quicker than just some random person throwing it up.
Yeah, I agree too. And you do have to have, you know, also, and you were talking about, you know, those, because everybody can have one, but it is easy, you know, to get one set up these days. But you have to have something there or nobody's going to. But, you know, nobody's going to listen. If there's not something there, eventually it just goes away on its own. Because,
yeah,
unless you're just happy with, you know, talking to yourself.
You've heard them too. I check out a lot of podcasts just to see them, brand new ones. And I'm just amazed how some can hold your interest and other are just like two people that just sound like nothing while they talk. I mean, absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's crazy, and you think, and of course, you know, God bless everybody who, you know, who wants to go out there and give it a shot, but, you know, at some point, you know, there has to be something there, or you're just doing a podcast for the sake of doing the podcast, which for me, I mean, I really fell ass backward into it. You know, I started it out, you know, just that little, you know, thing I told you about, you know, it's going to be kind of a fun little thing for me and Dylan and a few of our friends to kind of come
right
on, and, you know, maybe I didn't really expect anybody to start, you know, listening, you know, and for it to be any kind of, you know, like place somebody would come on to plug stuff, you know, but then the listeners, you know, people started listening and word of mouth got out. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm sitting here and I've got, you know, friggin' Roseanne on the phone and Phil Rosenthal, who created Everybody Loves Raymond, Stephen Tobolowsky, all these huge people are now on the podcast. I'm like, how the hell did this happen? And it really can happen. Like you said, one day it's 30 or 40 people. The next day, you're like, is this real? What life am I living now?
But isn't it a great life? Well, this would be the perfect time for you to plug your podcast and how people find it.
Sure, it's real easy. I mean, it's on iTunes, anywhere, but it's Dylan Brody's Neighbor's Couch. And the website is dylanbrodysneighborscouch.com. And all the back episodes are there. And like I said, you can find it on iTunes as well. And it also goes up at the same time it goes on the website and iTunes, it goes up on americascomedy.com. So any of those places you can find the couch.
And they follow you on Twitter?
At Crobama, C-R-O-B-A-M-A.
And now, how did you come up with that? Are you making fun of Brobama?
No. Actually, I'm an Obama guy. I was an Obama supporter, and my nickname when I grew up, you know, because I've got you'd have to kind of see me to know I've got like this weird beak like nose, and then this weird black pointy receding hairline, and, and a buddy of mine years ago said, you know, you kind of look like a crow. So everybody started calling me Crow. And then when I was an Obama supporter, a lot of my friends, you know, started, you know, made the new name Crobama. So that's where the term Crobama came from.
All right. I'm going to have to go back to the webpage now and try to find the crow image.
Yeah. Well, I really have to be in repose for the full beak to be, you know, on display.
Oh, okay. Kind of like Danny DeVito from Penguin?
It's pretty close, yeah, unfortunately, pretty close.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on with me. I'm going to get this posted as soon as I can. And I enjoyed doing your show. I got to tell you, it was a lot of fun. And that's why your show, I think, is working, too, is that you do a good interview.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and that's what I try to do. I mean, I throw in some stories and whatnot that I think people relate to, but I try to make it all about the guest and, you know, ask about what they're interested in. And that's really what I was interested in once the show got rolling, was just to talk to people and figure out what, you know, what they dig, you know, what they're, you know, what they enjoy doing and kind of their background and history. So I'm glad you enjoyed, and I hope you'll come back on.
I will do it again. Well, Darren, thanks for coming on the show, and we will definitely do this again on mine, and I'll do it again on yours. So thanks for joining me here on Remasculate.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Have a good one. We'll see you.
Bye-bye, Steve. Bye.
Well, there it is, my interview with Darren Staley. I hope you enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. I had fun doing his podcast, Dylan Brody's Neighbor's Couch. Yeah, check that out. You find it on the web. You'll find it on iTunes, like you said. Just find it, listen to it. You'll enjoy it. He was a great interview, and as you can tell, he was a great interviewer. So thanks for listening here on Remasculate. We'll see you next time. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu. Oh, yeah, that's good. You know where to find our sponsors. And our new one, Hangover Joe's. Check them out, hangoverjoes.com. You got a hangover, they'll knock that shit out for you. Bye-bye.
In the basement of the mud flap house, bluffing and poo, and they're under with the razor nose, and poo licks herself, and flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three, men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about booze and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your masculine. Oh, won't you come with me?